Welcome to the From the Vine podcast. I'm your host, Bob Highfill, a reporter and wine columnist with the Record Newspaper and RecordNet.com in Stockton, California. I'm a certified specialist of wine and level 3 certified with the Wine and Spirit Education Trust. I hope you enjoy this podcast, which focuses on the growers and vintners and winery principals in the Lodi American viticultural area. Please join the From the Vine Facebook group page. That's facebook.com/groups/FTV209. And for archived columns and FTV podcasts, check out recordnet.com/FTV. And welcome to the From the Vine podcast. I'm your host, Bob Highfill, and it's my great pleasure to have as my guest Stuart Spencer, who is Executive Director of the Lodi Wine Grape Commission. He also is winemaker and a key stakeholder in his family's winery, St. Amant Winery, here in Lodi, and also grows grapes for his winery. So, Stuart, thank you so much for being with us. It's a great pleasure. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Bob. Happy to have a conversation.
Well, I want to kind of stress the date that we are recording this. It's May 18th, the year 2020, and I think that's important because as we look back on this, this might provide a snapshot as to where we are at this point in time amid the coronavirus pandemic. We want to talk about how that has affected the Lodi wine region. We're going to talk about the tasting rooms and how those have been affected, but it's been a shutdown of more than 2 months now that we're going on. So, Stuart, how has it been going for Lodi wineries the past 2+ months here?
Well, I think for all of us, it's been quite a challenge trying to navigate the ever-changing regulations and rules and expectations of what has been coming at us from the state of California. I think, you know, when this first happened, you know, our customer base responded very well. And, you know, people were selling a lot of wine and doing curbside pickups and shipping wine all across the country. And you know, there was a dramatic shift that took place almost overnight as these stay-at-home orders went into effect.
And some wineries have, well, probably all of them have tried to adapt to the conditions. So tasting rooms are closed, and tasting rooms are a vital link for many of the wineries here in Lodi, which are, for the most part, smaller family-run operations. It's a vital link to their consumer base through direct-to-consumer sales of their product, but also in building their brand. And that's what I'm kind of concerned about, just about how those wineries are being affected.
Yeah, I think it's important to understand that each of us is experiencing this differently, and each of us, you know, each of our businesses is positioned better or worse for what has changed. And you know, some of our newer brands with a less established long-term customer base are struggling more. Some of our larger brands that have a greater presence in supermarkets, where we've seen a significant amount of growth, are doing well and seeing good shipments. And those that, you know, have very active, engaged wine clubs have been able to do very well. Some of our wineries that are more what I would call destination wineries, where, you know, they do a lot of events, and whether they're concerts or weddings or, you know, hospitality series or things like that, you know, it's a big struggle because that direct consumer connection is critical to their financial operation and critical to building the brand. One of the things that, you know, concerns me for the short term and the longer term is that, you know, those emotional connections that are made to a region when a person visits are critical to our long term success, both as a region and as an individual winery. And without that ability, there, you know, is a disconnect from what is needed to move the region forward. And so we are anxious to get back to a point where we can start entertaining guests again in a responsible and safe way.
Absolutely. Not only direct-to-consumer sales, but all of the events have had to be canceled. And as you said, that's a vital pipeline between the winery and its customer base. As Executive Director of the Lodi Wine Grape Commission, one of your important functions is helping grow the brand throughout the country and globally through participation in wine shows and other events. That all has had to be put on hold, and Lodi really was generating quite a bit of momentum in that area, and this has kind of put a stop to that. I guess there's never a good time for a pandemic, is there?
No, there's not. It's been a challenge the last several months because many of our events that we both participate in and host have, you know, either been postponed or canceled, or postponed and then canceled. And it's been really challenging from a planning perspective. I mean, we were supposed to be heading to VinExpo Hong Kong right now, this week, promoting Lodi wine on the global stage. We were supposed to be in Europe in the middle of March for a series of big events and tastings. I just completed a series of master classes on Lodi wine across in Houston, Washington, D.C., and Denver, you know, almost days before we were shut down. And so those were good, effective tools that we use. But at the moment, you know, we're not sure when any of those things are going to be able to happen again.
And just for, I guess, reference, if my research was correct, the governor, Gavin Newsom, declared a state of emergency in California on March 5th, and then the stay-at-home order kind of went down on March 19th, although I do believe some tasting rooms began closing or modifying their operations prior to March 19th. So it's been, you know, good solid 2 months without that part of the business operating. Now, San Joaquin County has a roadmap to recovery. The governor is beginning to reopen California in phases. We're currently in phase two, so some businesses are allowed to reopen, some with restrictions and modifications. So far, winery tasting rooms have not fallen under that relaxation of restrictions. So, I don't know, Stuart. Golly, I think this is an impossible question to answer, but do you have a sense as to what, you know, needs to be done? I know the governor has outlined certain requirements for counties to meet before they can reopen, but what needs to happen now? What else can the county do, or what else can, you know, people do to get us moving forward in reopening some of these tasting rooms?
We've been embroiled in these conversations going on for the last couple months. And, you know, when the first stay-at-home orders came out, you know, our community wanted to be seen as being responsible and doing the right thing. And we broadly encouraged everyone to follow the orders and do what was needed. As things have evolved, there is some growing frustration within the community that you know, the goalposts seem to have been moved, and now there's a much more stringent set of criteria in place. And when you look at San Joaquin County, it's a very large and diverse county, and the cases and deaths in the Lodi area are not like they are in other parts of the county, and San Joaquin County as itself is not like other parts of the state. And so we've been, I've been encouraging our vintners to reach out to their county board of supervisors and start conversations. We've worked very closely with the California Wine Institute and regional directors across California to develop a rigorous set of guidelines that would allow us to reopen our tasting rooms in a safe and responsible way. And those have been passed along to our county, and they have been passed along to the state as well. And the California Wine Institute is advocating on our behalf at that level to try and get tasting rooms included in this later stage two reopenings. We feel we can do it in a very safe and responsible way. Most of our tasting rooms are in areas that are outdoors, have vineyards around them. It can be done safely, and that's what we're advocating for.
You have been working very closely with the Wine Institute. And on May 5th, the Wine Institute released some guidelines, 7 pages total, but really 5 pages of substantive material with lots of guidelines on it. It's really very extensive, everything from employee training to sanitizing practices, wearing of face coverings. I did want to touch on a few things, and maybe that could help in our discussion of what tasting rooms might look like in the future. Do you have a general opinion on, hopefully down the road, we get back to normal, where people can come in, they can have a good time, they can congregate, we can get back to that relationship between the customer and the winery in that tasting room setting. But these guidelines, at least initially, are very different from that scenario. Are there some that, for instance, tasting rooms must, according to these guidelines from the Wine Institute, require that all tasting room visits be by appointment only until assessment of guest management, social distancing effectiveness can be evaluated. So at least initially, it sounds like the recommendation is for appointment only, as opposed to where customers could visit the region and at their leisure go from winery to winery.
Yeah, the guidelines are just that. They're guidelines to demonstrate that we can do this in a responsible and safe way. Each individual winery is going to have to apply them to their specific circumstances, and they may apply them in different ways. Some wineries may already be tasting by appointment. We just held a webinar last week with a company that provides online or digital solutions to appointment-based systems. And so, the simple goal there is to be able to control the traffic flow in a way that maintains appropriate distancing and allow people, the opportunity to come out and taste the wines and hopefully purchase them. And so I think these are hurdles that we are all quite ready to deal with. And speaking with our other vintners, they'll do what they need to do to get back open. Some may choose, to do it slightly differently than others, or they may decide that, we're going to wait until it's a little bit more relaxed before they open up. But, each of them needs to be able to make that decision of their own accord. But we're quite comfortable with these sets of guidelines that they can be done in a responsible way. And they'll continue to get, tweaked as we move forward and work on them. So,
right. It's going to be an evolving process.
Yeah. I think that, at the end of the day, the most important thing that's going to come out of this is we need to instill a sense of trust in our customers, and our employees. They need to trust that we're looking out for them and that they feel comfortable coming there. And I think, it's the same thing whether you're going to your local grocery store or any restaurant. Half this is making your customer base feel comfortable that you're looking out for them, and reestablishing that trust is going to take some time, and it's going to gradually build across the community, and people will start coming out more.
And you feel most of the wineries are equipped to adhere to these guidelines, if so.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think, in all honesty, most of these guidelines, when you see, you read them and do them, they make common sense, and business people are pretty good at common sense. And so I think they could put things in place that fit their operation. And some of them are, it's going to be a little more challenging than others based upon the space they have to work with. But, they can figure things out. I'm certain of that.
Can we talk about supply chains?
Absolutely.
So agriculture is an essential business, so our farmers are going full speed ahead. We're right now in kind of the shoot thinning bloom phase of the growing season, and they're out there doing what they need to do. You're out there doing what you need to do to ensure a good crop this season. But then at that point, when the wine is made, how might this pandemic affect the supply chain? We see plenty of wine on storeroom shelves. The tasting rooms are currently closed. Export markets, I think, are challenged by modes of transportation a great deal, too. So where are we kind of in that little section of the of the situation?
Well, I think like most industries, everything has kind of been upended and, and we are trying to figure these things out. I think one of the challenges is you got to recognize that 16 to 18% of all wine sold in this country was sold at on-premise operations at restaurants and wine bars and things like that. And that went from, you know, 16 to 18% to zero overnight, essentially. And so that isn't coming back overnight either. You know, many of those places are not going to open up. This is too devastating for their business. And it's going to take some time before people get back to those levels of travel and dining out like they did before. The tourism component of it is a huge one, too. The traveling around the country and the world and the entertainment, dining and drinking has completely shifted. And so we have to, you know, recognize that going out of that. And I don't think anyone knows what this is going to look like in 6 months from now. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can all sit around and make our guesses of what things are going to look like, but we don't know. And we don't know, you know, if there will be, you know, second waves or peaks that, you know, impact this again. We don't know how quickly the economy is going to turn around and how quickly people are able to get back to work and start spending money. And so the supply chain is having to respond to that. I know I just the other day I heard one of the larger wine distributors across the country laid off 8,000 people that that do basically on-premise sales. And so getting those people back to work and working the supply chain is going to be tricky. Fortunately, you know, wine is not a perishable product like some others. I mean, that the whole act of converting grapes into wine preserves it. Mm-hmm. And and so you have a little bit more window within which to work. We didn't, you know, we're not, fortunately, we weren't in the middle of harvest when this all came about because, you know, there's been a constant series of changes in, you know, regulatory changes for dealing in the workplace that would have been really challenging to navigate at harvest time. And so for wine grapes, it came at a relatively decent time in our growing season. And so we can get prepared for what harvest will look like. And hopefully, you know, on the global basis, you know, every country is different, and how they respond is going to be, you know, how their individual economies come out of this is going to affect overall wine sales. I think the challenge though is that we were already in an oversupply situation when we went into this. Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of local, you know, vineyards removed this past year, and that's going to help things. But it's going to take some time for that to find its balance. And you know, fortunately, people are enjoying more wine at home these days. And hopefully that continues. And hopefully, you know, we're going to see a new generation of wine drinkers come out of this and expand the customer base. What we have seen, you know, in the supply chain is, you know, a lot of the small and mid-sized producers that, you know, sell through restaurants, especially retailers, they've really had to shift to the direct-to-consumer business and come up with creative ways to grow that because a good portion of their business was cut off overnight.
Right.
We've seen tremendous growth at kind of at the grocery level and big level, warehouse level, but it's not easy for small producers and mid-sized producers to get into those stores. And so that growth is coming from the larger kind of global wine companies that are positioned well in those channels of business to sell and grow. And so fortunately for Lodi, those producers purchase a lot of grapes in the Lodi area, and their sales growth is going to help stimulate demand for Lodi grapes here.
It seems like it's affecting or will affect those wineries who have a significant amount of their revenue stream based on their tasting rooms, the direct-to-consumer sales, the events, the wine clubs, all of those.
Yeah, things. They're the ones that are going to be most directly impacted, and it's going to take some time to build back. One of the things I think that leaves me somewhat optimistic for the Lodi area is I think as travel does start to develop, it's going to be more regionally based, you know, and so it'll be day drives and day trips. And, you know, a good 75% of our wine tourism traffic is pretty regionally Northern California based. And so we're, you know, comfortable that that will be able to come back sooner rather than later, as opposed to kind of, you know, domestic, you know, travel from across the country or international travel. It could be a little longer period of time before that type of traffic returns.
Right. We're talking a lot about agritourism here in Lodi. In 2018, according to Visit Lodi, there were almost 990,000 visitors to Lodi who spent $211 million. So it's a significant significant amount of visitors who then hopefully spread the word about Lodi as they go back home, and a significant amount of money spent.
Yeah, just a point on that. I mean, before this all came down, we fortunately were able to celebrate our Lodi Wine and Chocolate Weekend in February. And, you know, we attracted 5,000 people from across the country. I think we had 18 states represented at this year's event. And those events are critical in kind of growing the customer base, mm-hmm. and bringing new customers to Lodi Wine. And so, you know, the tourism element of it is key to the brand.
Right. And obviously the Zinfest, which is now the Row by Row Festival, an event out at Lodi Lake that draws people from all over the North America.
Yeah. You know, we were supposed to have had that this past weekend. And it was a tough one because we'd spent the last, 6 months kind of rebranding that event and refreshing it. We had some great ideas and things planned for this year, but we had to make the call, a month and a half ago or 2 months ago when we didn't know how this was going to unfold. But last year, you know, we had, you know, another people from 18 to 20 states represented, several countries. People really travel from far and wide to those events. So they're kind of key in building it. And the challenge looking forward is we don't know when we're going to be able to do those things. Those type of activities are really at the final stage of this. And I'm not sure when that's going to happen, but as a fellow sports guy, Bob, you know, it's hard for me to imagine going a whole year without a baseball, football, or basketball game happening in California.
Yeah, so. Or some wine festivals in California and Lodi especially to go to. It's just not a pleasant thing to think about. Plus all the fun dinners and winemaking events, all of those things have just been disrupted because of this. But looking on the positive side, I think when this is over, my sense is that we'll probably see a spike in those activities as people, I think, are going to really be anxious to get back out there and do the things they love to do.
Yeah, yes, I think you're absolutely right. And that's one of the reasons why, we're trying to get our vintner community very prepared with appropriate tools and guidelines and training in place so that when we are able to open up, we can manage the guests in a very responsible way across the region.
Kind of jumping back here a little bit to what the tasting room might look like down the road. And we really can't speculate, you know, as to when that is going to happen. But based on the Wine Institute's guidelines, if I'm a consumer and I come to St. Amant Winery to taste wine, assuming that there are these guidelines, can you give a sense to our listeners kind of what that might look like? In other words, say I come in, what do you think might be in place to ensure your safety, your workers' safety, your employees' safety, and mine as well? What might that actually really look like?
So I think the first and probably biggest one is they're going to try and keep the group separate as they're coming in and try and limit the group size. So we don't want to see, a party bus of bachelorettes out of 18 women looking for a good day, but hopefully soon. Limit the group sizes to like six and separate the tables. We may, be doing things like some may pour flights of wines instead so that they're minimizing that direct interaction. Tasting room staff may be wearing masks and things like that. There's probably going to be appropriate and significant signage about, mm-hmm. So that, that people can be informed about, if you're sick, you shouldn't be coming in and things like that. There could be, training is going to be a key part of this. You know, and these are the type of things you're going to the guests may not notice, but that we'll have to be working on with our staff in terms of just, you know, proper sanitation and how you're handling things, you know, touchless payment systems. You know, we're exploring all those things so that they don't have to, you know, be touching the payment devices. Mm-hmm. Some of those things. I think you are going to see people trying to utilize their outdoor space more too, which is, fortunately, we're moving into the summer months and it's a nice time to sit outside. And so, you know, out in the public air is they say, is one of the more healthy places to be. And so I think those are a few of the things you will start to see. And I think, you know, you'll probably see less kind of the tasting, everybody grouped up in a bar kind of mm-hmm. atmosphere. I think it'll be more setting them aside, making sure this group of four is separate from that group of four. But hopefully we can continue that, you know, we're able to work in a way so that we can, you know, create that hospitality experience that everyone's looking for. You know, you want to be able to have conversations with people and mm-hmm. tell them about your wines and do it in a way that is safe and responsible, but also is helping create an experience that is memorable.
Absolutely. Is there anything we haven't touched on, Stuart, that you think is kind of important to this conversation? Were asked to speak with county supervisors and give your input. Can you tell us a little bit about those conversations or conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important, you know, in the position we're in here is to make sure we're helping connect our business community, winery community, with their elected leaders. And you know, at first, many felt kind of helpless. It's like, where do I even go to try and get things moving forward here? And so, you know, we've helped connect our vintners with the San Joaquin County Board of Supervisors. We've provided them with the guidelines that the Wine Institute has developed and tried to facilitate those conversations. We've also, you know, helped work, you know, providing that information to our state elected officials too, so that they have the tools necessary to move forward. I think, you know, the county wanted to know, you know, that we could do things in a safe and responsible way, and that there was a set of guidelines in place that could be provided to our vintner community that would help them do this in a responsible way. And I think, you know, that is one of the advantages we have over other local industries is we are locally organized. You know, we have a very tight-knit group community here that works well together and have recognized the value of working well. And so we've been in regular communication with everybody. And we've done our best to kind of update them on the changing nature of this. And it's been very confusing, and trying to interpret, you know, some of these orders has been a challenge. And so, you know, we've tried to help facilitate that communication and hopefully get things moving forward.
Right. Hopefully that comes soon.
Yes.
Stuart Spencer has been my guest on the From the Vine podcast. We thank you very much for joining us. Until next time.